So here comes this super tall dude and his hot wife, and I'm like, holy shit, it's Tony Hawk. So I got to hang out with fucking Tony Hawk while I mixed Mos Def while my dick touched an old Alan Keith. What a fucking day. All right, start the intro. Start it now.
You are listening to the Signal to Noise podcast on the ProSoundWeb Podcast Network, sponsored by Audix. Hear what you've been missing. Audix is proud to introduce the new line of dynamic closed-back headphones designed for audio professionals and audiophiles to deliver the most accurate sound possible.
I wish I could break free, back to where I'm supposed to be.
Welcome back to the Signal to Noise podcast. Kyle Brian Turnside. What's going on, man?
I kind of hope that we put that snippet in at the beginning. I mean, you can bleep the part about my dick.
We might have to bleep you. But just in case anyone is wondering whether or not Kyle Brian Turnside is still relevant and his level of cool, I think that story will put those fears to bed. Maximum relevance, maximum coolness. Kyle, it's an honor to have you on the show, man.
Thank you, Michael. And as usual, the guy who actually runs the show and just doesn't say it, Chris Leonard, ladies and gentlemen.
Hey, what's up?
What's up, Chris? How you doing, man?
Doing all right. I got to do some sledding today, which is cool. You know, we didn't get any snow last year, so it was nice to get a couple inches of snow and take the kids out and go sledding. So, yeah, good times.
I think you just wanted to go sledding and you used a kid.
Yes, this is true.
So we have a lot of cool stuff to talk about. Joining us this episode is my dude, Wes Stark. Wes is an audio engineer. He's from Grand Junction, Colorado, which is not a very big city from what I've gathered from my conversations with Wes. And there's a couple reasons I asked Wes to be on the show with us tonight. One of them is that Wes and I are sort of in a similar boat in that we're sort of, you know, freelance system tech audio people, and we both have ties to small production companies. And when you work for a small production company, it's just a different reality than working for a really big company like IMS, right, that has a bunch of cool stuff in the inventory. And it's like you probably have one PA or two PAs. This is what you have. You're limited in terms of what's available to you, and you really often just have to make it work. One of the other struggles that I've run into is the other people on the show that you're working with. They might be freelancers. They might be people that are brought in. You know, it can be a struggle. I have to say this diplomatically.
In Colorado, you have to worry about where you're going to tie up your dog while you're doing loading. It's true, though. It's true.
It is true, but that's not really what I had in mind. But first of all, Wes, welcome to the show, man. Welcome to it.
He got a crash course in how silly we are right before the show started.
Oh, yeah. Wes, this is something you and I've talked about a lot over the last couple of months. You know, when you're working with a mom and pop production company, a lot of times you really have to advocate for good sound. And what I mean by that is you have to fight a little bit for your speaker placements. You have to fight a little bit to get those extra boxes on the truck. You might have to, you know, so there's a lot more legwork that you have to do in a lot of cases to get to a good result, because I'm going to use the word training. I had to train some of the local companies that I work with around here. You literally have to condition them to trust you. Right. When I ask for this piece of gear, I'm not just asking it because I like to have cool gear. It's because I need to solve a problem with it. And then this gets easier over time for me, which is after a while they go, wow, OK, you know, that really did sound good. And that's a good result. And so next time he asks for that extra two boxes, I'm going to give it to him. But that's been my experience, is that you really have to put a lot of effort into building that relationship and building that trust and to get what you feel you need to get to do a good job. Mm-hmm. Not really a question there, but I'm going to throw it at you anyway.
Michael, I completely agree with you. One of my biggest ambitions is to be able to be on a tour where I have the ability to do the same thing day in and day out with a different means for each venue. And although that's a lofty goal right now, I'm also at the same time getting a similar experience working at a small production house, because sometimes it's very similar to what I understand entry level touring where you kind of have to make the best with what you have. And that mentality has been especially true during the pandemic with the limited amount of work, especially with the limited budgets, as people that are normally hiring out don't have the same flexibility or the same turnouts, and the margins are so much smaller. So it's more true now than it ever has been for me that you really just have to do what you can with what you have. A personal, I don't know, mantra of mine in the past few years has been pristine when possible, but always excellent. And it's so challenging at a small production house when sometimes what excellence is a sliding scale based on the type of client you're working with, the genre of show, whether it's corporate or an installation, or if it's a live music gig, or if it's even for church live sound, it's much different. So one of my things that I'm most excited about is it's allowing me to be, in Dave Ratt's terms, kind of like a Swiss Army knife. However, my work with Michael through a shout out to the mentoring program through Signal to Noise podcast.
What? Hey, shout out.
It's been an opportunity to start to develop speciality and begin the long course of system engineers work. So I'm kind of getting the best of both worlds. And thank God I found Michael, because it's really scratching an itch that I may have otherwise.
Glad you said that.
Going to company for that.
I'm glad you said. Michael scratches my itches all the time. Thank goodness for Michael Lawrence.
Thanks, buddy. You know what I was thinking? Pristine when possible, but always excellent. Is that reminds me of your hair, Kyle. But I wanted to get to this later. But since you brought it up, Wes, it's definitely something I want to talk about. You reached out. I mean, we had sat on an episode, and for those who don't know, because it's been a couple episodes since we mentioned it, Kyle set up a mentoring program on our Facebook group. And you can go there and you can get hooked up with somebody who's working in a field that you want to learn about and, boost your knowledge and ask your questions. And I think that's an awesome thing that Kyle did. And I had said at one point, hey, if you're a non-Facebook person like me, send me an email. And Wes, you reached out to me. And one of the first thing you said is super important. And it's something that I've heard other people, particularly college students, have said this to me a couple of times. Said, man, it was really hard to reach out to you. Like, it's not easy for me. Mm-hmm. I recently gave a talk at Eric Ferguson's class up at Hudson University. And
oh, I know Fergie.
Yeah. And he's been on our show before. And one of his students said to me, you know, because I talked about, you know, a lot of the advances that I got early in my career were just because I was cold calling people. And just calling them up and asking them questions. And she said, well, what about for those of us who, you know, don't have that self-confidence? That's not really easy for us. And that really kind of put me back on my heels. And I really thought about that a lot. And so a little bit of what I want to talk about is overcoming that speed bump, right? And how important that is. And as soon as someone goes, hey, man, you know, I really would like to talk to you about this stuff. I'm like, yeah, call me up. Let's do it. Like, it's really easy from there. And you can just coast downhill on your skis or on your sled if you're Chris. That's the hardest thing to do is to go, hey, I would like some help. I would like to talk to you about this. I would like to learn whatever this topic. Chris, you had a comment? Well,
yeah. I want to take it one step further in a real world example of it doesn't have to be necessarily starting with, hey, I need help. Like, you know, there's a little secret here. It's funny. I was telling Wes before we started this, the reason I'm on this podcast is because I was listening to it and I was like, hey, I have some ideas of what Michael could probably do with this. And I shot, you know, Michael a message on LinkedIn and we started chatting it up. And 2 months later I was on the podcast. So, and it, you know what I mean? Like, it was just, you know, it wasn't like I was asking to be here. I got drug here. I'm just kidding. But
we are full though. So don't try that. No one else try that trick. Cause you're not, we're full up on hosts now.
Yeah. No, but the idea was like, it goes, we obviously preach networking, right? So like, even I would say that that initial barrier, not to take this away from Wes, but like the initial barrier is like, just like this industry is small, right? And you, so on a one level of, you never know who you're going to again or what resources you're ever going to need. So, you know, and we're all like human, even your pooches, your Raybolds, the people who we think would be like the quote unquote, like upper echelon of our industry, they're just normal engineers like us who happen to maybe get paid more to do bigger acts, you know? And so like the yes, I would urge people to, if you ever have a hesitation to reach out to somebody, worst case, they don't ever get back to you, right? So what? You go on to the next person. But 9 times out of 10, people are going to get back to you.
So you're just putting yourself on the radar. It's all about just putting yourself on the radar and just saying hi. And, you know, it's been, you know, people have, I've said, hey, you know, why don't you come with me to this gig and shadow me? And people are like, well, I don't really feel called. I'm like, look, you asked. And Kyle, I mean, Kyle will agree with this. Kyle and I did a couple panels at the Webster University AES show. And I give out my email, my cards, probably 50 to 100 kids. And I'll get one email, you know, for 50 people that say, hey, I really want to do what you do. I really want to talk to you. I really want to learn this. And I'm like, yeah, call me, you know, text me, email me, whatever. Here's my info. I'll hear from one of those people. So it just be that one. You know what I mean?
Yep. Same with the Facebook thing. I mean, even when it launched, I actually took on 3. I'm still talking to 2. One is hard to talk to because he's across the pond, but the ones that have reached out, it's formed a pretty cool relationship. I mean, everyone from an event planner to a touring engineer from the UK who does a lot of US tours. So, you know, it just takes that person to reach out. And I hope a lot of older engineers like myself do that same thing, because when I was a kid, it was hard to get information about this. There wasn't the web, you know, you had to go to a payphone to find your next gig or whatever. We can make a bunch of jokes about me later, but
did you ever break any of those stone tablets that were
trying to I really broke a couple of the commandments at one
well,
point.
Well, let me say this, Kyle. I mean, and this, Kyle, you've said this to me before, like people are not, you're not bothering us.
No,
by messaging, emailing, people like, hey, oh, I know your time's valuable. Like, I love hearing from people. It's cool when we get a note just like, hey, guys, really like the episode this week. Like, that's cool. But no, I mean, Wes will tell you, I said, hey, pick an hour, you know, once a week, and let's put it on the calendar. And we meet every week, unless one of us has got a gig or something. And we sit down and we just go through, and, you know, Wes will spend a week, you know, working on something or taking notes or reading something. And then he'll just come back with questions and we'll just talk about it. And I look forward to that time. So
I'm a dick about it too. So if you email me and you're like asking me a bunch of questions and then you have a tag with your phone number at the bottom, I'll just call your phone number. Like, I'm not going to sit there and answer a super long ass email when I can get to know you. And because those questions develop other questions, mm-hmm. you know, those questions develop, you know, where you're leading with that question. So it's about the personal interaction too. And I think we've lost out on some of that because I can't text as fast as some people can, and it gets lost in translation. So it's really cool to actually make this mentorship program a thing that we talk about. Like, I love that you set a day every week, Michael. That's awesome. I wish I could do that with my schedule, but, you know, I try to talk to them at least, you know, touch base and say hello, and even personal questions, you know, how's things there, blah, blah, blah. But yeah, it's turned out pretty good. And like you said, 1 out of 50, I always say if you're hitting 10%, you're not doing a bad job. So 1 out of 50 is good return on this. And then, you know, maybe it'll swell from there. Like, we have a lot of good folk that we could hook people up with too. So if we don't have the time or the knowledge base to do it, our Rolodex is pretty fat. Like, it's cool to be able to call somebody and say, hey man, someone was asking me about pyrotechnics. Like, what could you help me out with? Or whatever the case, whatever you don't know about.
Yeah, and that's, I really look forward to connecting people. And, you know, I had a student say to me, yeah, I'm really interested in like broadcast sound. I said, oh, okay, let me get you hooked up with Andrew Stokely, you know, or I'm really interested in product design in audio. Okay, let me hook you up with Ryan John. You know what I mean? Like, and so I really enjoy connecting those people, and that stuff, you know, if you keep in touch with those people, you have that in your Rolodex, that's super, super valuable. And the other thing that I'll just add to that is, even if you can't set up a standing time, like Wes and I do, we do, what is it, 11 a.m. on Tuesdays, Wes?
Yep, 9 for me, but it's just the same every week.
That's right.
We call it Kyle time.
Yeah, we had to make Kyle his own time zone so he would stop missing the recordings for the show. just knowing that this person is available, like, I try to make it clear, like, hey, you know, if you have a question, shoot me an email or send me a text. Like, I'll answer you. You don't have to wait, you know. you can call me up. It's okay. I actually, you know what? I'll throw this down. I got a call from Chris Rabel the other day who wanted to know how to do something in Smart. And it was a 12-second phone call. And he's like, hey, man, I really appreciate it. I'm like, dude, are you kidding me? Like, Chris Rabel. So that's cool. No, I enjoy that stuff. So, I mean, Wes, what's it? I mean, what's your – I'll put you on the spot a little bit, dude. What's your experience been working through your own – you know, kind of hesitancy to reach out and to ask questions and to try to, you know, push that network a little bit. How's that been for you?
It's been really challenging. The best part about all of this is I'm learning technical skills and soft skills at the same time. By nature, me trying to figure out how to ask an informed question and be respectful of your time in turn makes me feel more approachable and valuable to my own coworkers and those around me. And it's especially important as I'm learning things, you know, that may be unclear to those who aren't in the field. It's so helpful to be able to dialogue in multiple long format conversations, but then I get so excited about it and like it returns the passion of why I really want to get deeper into the knowledge base. It's such a refining process then to tell my girlfriend who doesn't know shit about anything we might be discussing, but then trying to find a way to make it communicative and also show her that it's relevant to even our listening experience at home. There's ways of translating it that is also really valuable, which in turn makes her more interested in what I'm doing. Because similarly, if she's asking about something that she doesn't know but wants to know about, that approachability I can simply mirror from my interactions with Michael and those around me who I've gleaned from. It's been really hard, but that is the positive side. You know, the downside is I personally struggle with anxiety. Doing monitors is really enjoyable, but also challenging because I'm dealing directly with the client. And some of those soft skills I can directly see most likely carrying over when the season returns. I'm especially looking forward to the day where, as a system tech that's aspiring to be better, I can have more informed conversations with A1s and people coming through, but also reference that, hey, if they're asking me where I've learned some things, I don't have to take the prideful, egotistical stance of this is where it came from. I can more so say I've talked to some friends and I learned a lot, instead of just being the guy that thinks he knows it all, but is really just the dog with its tail between its leg. So to answer your question, Michael, I really do think that the soft skills of dialoguing consistently is been very good for my ego. But what's so nice about it is that it's consistent, that I know that every Tuesday on a personal and interpersonal level, I'm going to be challenged because I am, like many of us, pretty introverted and would rather be nose deep in a book with a laptop.
You make me sound scary. You're going to scare people. I'm not scary, I promise.
Yes, he is.
negligible.
And it's not necessarily that you're Michael. It's just that previous to me working directly with you, similar to you, Chris, similar to you, Kyle, you know, I'm listening to the podcast. I'm really, you know, writing down, taking a lot of notes. I'm deep into ProSound Web and all these things. I just see Michael's name popping up. So it's not necessarily whiplash by any means, but it's been very nice to normalize talking with people that you deeply respect. That is going to be especially important as my career begins to grow.
I kind of want to know what you would write down about me, but we won't talk about that on this episode.
So you want me to email it?
No, we'll yes, come back well,
it's
to
a,
it.
It's a complaint, so yes, please email it.
Signal well, we should number say, two noise.
No. You can just go to signaltonoisepodcast.com now.
Oh, yeah.
Hey. Right. We have a cool website, and there's a form on it. You can just fill the form out. It still goes right to Kyle. So.
How about that bottleneck?
My question to you, Wes, then, is what is the best shit that you hung up the phone with Michael and you were like, that's the best shit I've heard? Seriously, like I've had those moments too, and we're probably going to have them on the show soon. But I met Buford, and he was just telling stories, and I walked out of that room after he got done telling stories, and I was like, that is the best shit I've ever heard. And the same with Howard Page, like you remember the thing. Mm-hmm. He told me to quit fiddling around, and I took that with me every day. So Wes, what is the best shit you heard from Michael where you got off the phone and you were like, that's it?
Taco Bell Taco Tuesday sale.
Yeah, Taco Bell.
That's a really good question. One of our first conversations, was just about managing expectations and just doing the best with what you can, but being firm. This is kind of circling back to what we initially discussed, but the process of kind of like grooming people in trying to train them and teach them how things really could be. And I think it was, I wish I could give the specific timeline of when it was, but essentially we were discussing that it's really, really simple. It's just trying to point speakers at people's ears and make sure that half the battle is making sure the PA is set up as it's expected to be. And what is so nice and simple about that is, as most fundamentals can be, completely misunderstood and deployed improperly. So for me, without even pulling out a measurement rig or getting involved with math and doing all the nerdy shit where I pull out a calculator for my workbox, it was just like, okay, well, let's, if I have no DSP and no measurement mic, no laptop, and all I have is a song that I know, like, how can I make the most out of this? And it really just solidified the fact that the fundamentals and the excellence in those are the thing that 90% of people probably are getting wrong. And honestly, like, we haven't had many gigs to demo it, but just focusing on those fundamental principles. And I wish I had a more, you know, gravitas answer for you, but really this was just an example of just like, point the fucking speakers where the people are.
I've said it over and over again. That is the most common problem that I encounter. When someone calls me and says, hey, can you come and take a look at our system? It's weird. It's, you know, we're come tune it, whatever. The most common problem that I find is the speakers are either in the wrong location or pointed the wrong direction.
Mm-hmm.
And I know I have a reputation for being heavily involved in analyzers and DSP. Like, I get that. But we can't start that conversation if your speaker's not pointed the right way.
Exactly.
And so back to the small town thing. I mean, my buddy Nate, who's A2 for me, a lot of the shows that we do around here, he used to work for another company in our area that has, I don't know, 24 boxes of a mid-size array product, but they have no way to hang it. And they have, so it's always ground stacked, and then there's no DSP. So you really have a blunt tool here. Like, all you have is angles.
Mm-hmm.
Like, aim is your only thing. And so, yeah, I mean, you can measure that thing all day, but you can't go put an EQ or you can't do anything to it, right? So that doesn't really enter the equation. It comes down to, you know, position is really important. Aim is really important. Understanding these things. Now, I'm not saying that, hey, production companies, you don't need DSP. I'm not saying that. Like, that is not a sufficient rig to send out, mm-hmm. right? We agree on that. It's missing parts. However, when you have these situations where you're really, really, really stuck, and I mean, one of the trucks broke down and didn't make it, and you're missing stuff. I mean, this stuff happens, mm-hmm. right? Or excuse me, God forbid, you know, you blow something up. I mean, there's any number of things that can happen where all of a sudden your tool set is reduced. You have to know your basic fundamental principles if you want to get as much mileage as you can. And it's like, I mean, the first thing you said was like, you know, we can't always get to where we want to be, but let's take our situation, let's make it as good as it can be.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, that's all about understanding the principles.
You know, it's system optimization when it comes to attitude, just doing what you can. Simple as that.
Yeah.
You just have to adjust in function.
Yeah. And I think, I think Chris Raybould said it in one of his videos, but he said, you know, I might go into a church or a house of worship. Someone will call me in, and he said, I think it was Raybould. He said, I'll come in and I'll look at what you have and where you are, and I'll see how far we can go. And I was like, yeah, I really like that. You know what I mean? Because, a part of the small company thing is you go, look, they didn't really have, the client is not paying for the big system, so you're going speakers on sticks. And you're like, oh, well, that, you know, there's okay. We've already made some compromises by doing that. Mm-hmm. And then you're like, oh, you can't put them here because there's lighting positions there and we don't want to have them here because the side. So you end up with like way less PA than you needed, and it's in a lousy spot. And so you really quickly end up backed into these corners where you're like, oh no, this is a nightmare, you know? And so when you can do those gigs and you still have people coming up and saying, hey, that sounded really good. That's a nice feeling, but that's really, you know, that's where the rubber's going to hit the road in terms of how well can you apply this tool set when you're in a technical straitjacket or a logistical straitjacket, so to speak, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, I have a blog post from way, way back, and the whole thing was the speakers are on sticks, so I have no vertical aim component. I have no horizontal placement component. I have no DSP. It's an old analog mixer plugged right into these things. I have no system EQ. All I can do is aim this thing, like swivel it left and right. Like that's the whole, right? And adjust the stand height. Mm-hmm. Those are my two variables. And I showed, okay, here's how I made each of those two decisions. Here's how I chose my stand height. Here's how I chose which way I'm going to point this thing. Mm-hmm. And then I have measurements that show the front to back drop off and the variance over the space. And so the whole point is like, even when you have no variables available to you, mm-hmm. There are still some approaches that are going to be better than others. And so this is when you really want to know that, and you want to be able to make an informed decision.
It just gets easier to mix as you apply the fundamentals correctly. I've noticed a huge improvement in my consistency, just really trying to be thorough about having a reason for everything I do. That's another one that I'll throw Michael a bone for. I don't know if it's an original Michael Lawrence quote, but one of the first articles we had, yeah, it's probably Jesus or something, right? But he just talked about having a reason for everything you do. I remember when I first got into measurement, I had just purchased like a copy of Smart DI. I had just really gotten into prediction. So I had Map XT going. This is a couple of years ago. And I was on a corporate gig where the client stripped all of the budget. So what they agreed on, and I'm not kidding, is they agreed to use the in-house ceiling speakers and then also include a single sub just under the stage.
Sweet.
Been there, done that.
Right. But the cool thing was I was able to go in my free time because I didn't want to be learning smart on the job. I went in my free time and I just measured it. I want to be like, okay, this sounds terrible in my head. Let's just go figure it out. You know, I pulled my boss aside. It's like, hey, I'd really like to show you some measurements. This crossover is ridiculously high and I'm getting comb filtering like you've never seen or heard before because it's so loud. What was helpful is being able to show them actionable data and then hand it off to the office side of things and then discuss how can we maybe really make sure that we suggest a larger PA or maybe do it at our cost, just fly it. I'll personally hang it myself because they're going to be very underwhelmed having a live band with ceiling speakers and a single sub. And what was cool about that is I didn't get the six boxes aside that I wanted, but I got three. You know, I'll take it because it's really about earning that trust, not only with the client, but also my employer. I want to give a specific shout out to my boss and my management because although we're a small company, during this pandemic time, we've really taken a hard look at ourselves and kind of shed some skin in order to understand what we want to be as a company. And they've been so kind to bring me in as a core team member of that overhaul. But it's, you know, conversations like that where I'm saying, hey, I'm the audio guy on this and this isn't quite going to cut it. What can we do that's different, even if it's on my time? Not on my dime, but on my time. And that conversation, you know, has been danced very carefully, but that was before I'd interacted with people like Michael, where I can try to phrase things in ways that are incentivizing and appealing to other people. So I'm excited to take those challenges on in the future. I'm also scared, but I'm excited because it's just normalizing technical conversation and weaving it into, you know, day-to-day gigs as I hopefully continue to get to work in this field.
What scares you?
Michael.
Oh, yeah, seeing you with it.
I'm Chris, scared of. Do you want me to answer that? Or
yeah, I do. No, I do. I do. I do. I do want
your
you. To, yeah,
this is changed to Tuesdays with Kyle. We'll hang out, dude.
I'd love to. I'd love to talk to you. I'm a St. Louis Cardinals fan, so let's
yes,
talk about
that. Only the real baseball fan. Derails.
Dude, they play small ball. I'm just telling you right now, Tony La Russa and that era.
Oof. Yes.
Yes.
But, tell me about it. Talk more. I love this.
You guys can start a baseball show, okay?
Yes. Oh, yes.
It'll be a spinoff of how we got baseball
tacos, dude.
To answer Chris's question, just to be completely real and transparent, I'm afraid being an imposter. That is one of my darkest enemies, is not feeling validated by my own self. It's been a fine wire to walk and balance on learning so much in a short period of time without a lot of drive time to kind of solidify these workflows and habits and earn trust with my other coworkers. This pandemic in particular has been a lot of downtime, and I've just used it to invest in myself because all we have right now is gear and we have time. So for me, I consider it an investment, but it's been very, very challenging for me to begin getting certifications. But it's really about the time investment of knowledge and of passion. But I'm so afraid that I'm not going to be good enough for myself or for those around me. And I really have to work on that humility aspect of it, because it's been it's been something that's brought up constantly in my life. One of my favorite authors, he's referring to God in this instance, but he says more or less, life keeps breaking you until you stay open. And this has been, you know, a very, very meaningful time in my life where I can kind of detach my career from my selfhood. And it's very hard when, you know, gigs often blur that line with lack of sleep, with lack of time. And I don't know, I miss gigs.
Well, we all do. I think the fact that you are already able to be self-aware that you're worried of being an imposter or not knowing enough or not being confident enough is the start of turning that, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, the fact that you, you know, look, it's been tough for everyone. It was easy for everyone in the first month, 2 months, maybe in 3 months of this to basically just buckle down and study. Right. Mm-hmm. But now that we're 9, 10 months, however many freaking months we're into this thing now, to still be able to be engaging intently into that should be enough fortitude to yourself that, you know, you're in this for the long haul. Right. And I think that's, I think other people too have to realize that, like, there is, I feel like, you know, we have such a opportunity and wealth of knowledge to be that is just available at our fingertips now that we feel like, we all of a sudden have to consume it all and be able to be experts all at it instantaneously. Mm-hmm. Whereas in the past, you would have had to had much longer journey to get the level of knowledge that we have now. And so, you know, and so before it would have been acceptable for people to take their time and know that, like, this is a journey. Like, you don't go from it's, you know, there isn't a typical overnight success that flips into, you know, all of a sudden, like, you're there, right? And mm-hmm. so I think embracing the fact that it is going to be a journey, there is going to be mess ups, but that you will, you know, that you are in it for the long haul and are pursuing it should, I hope, would help fulfill you in confidence. And I think, honestly, the fact that you're already gut checking yourself to not be cocky about it will already, other people will instantly have more confidence in you because you're not being a dick about it. And I don't know. So I don't know if that helps at all, but I mean, I would try to re-internalize your fear and turn that into actually what should give you confidence because mm-hmm. of what you're going through.
Thank you, Chris. I appreciate your feedback.
I think the, for me, the qualified aspect of this, like, I mean, if you, it, of course it's going to come up to the Dunning-Kruger effect at some point where the people who have no idea what they're talking about generally have no idea that they have no idea what they're talking about, right? And the people who are just subject matter experts are they're the first people to say, like, oh, gee, I'm not sure. You know, I have to check on that and get back to you. And so, you know, Ethan Weiner has a great saying that I love, and I like want it on a poster in my office. And it says, the first rule of Dunning-Kruger Club is that you don't know you're in it. And I think that's hilarious. That's it's really
one.
True.
That's a good t-shirt. So
the fact that you're like, you know, gee, I'm about to say this thing. Am I really sure that thing's actually true? Am I really sure that I know what I'm talking about? I mean, I routinely get that going into new gigs and new jobs. And like, man, I really hope I don't screw this up. That's a very healthy thing to a degree. Mm-hmm. I think there's a point when it can be detrimental and it can cause you problems. But if someone never, ever, ever considers whether or not the things they're saying are true or whether or not there's a chance that there might be something coming down out of left field that they're not aware of, like if someone's not having those little moments, you know, that would probably be something that I would be concerned with for sure. Sir Kyle Bryan, please.
I have a question, and this is going to be good to talk about because I've never heard anyone talk about this, but I have experienced it for myself several times. I've done ton of shows at high elevation, so you mm-hmm. might know where I'm going with this.
Okay, sure.
sound reinforcement at high elevations with thin air.
Mm-hmm.
And I've experienced a few things, but I want to know what you do to adjust to that as well.
I can tell you what I've done, and I can tell you what I plan on doing when I get the opportunities to do that again. Firstly, I'll start with, as a rule, we generally try to, you know, add an additional couple of boxes per side because it is so hard to really throw some of these longer distances. Particularly Telluride and Copper Mountain. Telluride is a wonderful ski town that has an indoor club.
It's beautiful. Where
it's super beautiful. I've never seen anything
food
like
is delicious.
It. Food is delicious. let's just date, Kyle. Jesus Christ, you know.
Yeah, right. I love it.
What we typically do is we just make sure we double up our boxes. It's really easy to have people that are coming through, especially for some of these mountain towns. They're just like fly dates or in the middle of wonky tour transitions. So basically in Western Colorado, where I'm located, it's typically getting people that are going either way between Denver and Salt Lake. So because of that, it's either a direct fly date or it's some traveling between that. And we have people that are at drastically different elevations for those two gigs. So that's mainly the first thing that we do. But I remember we were doing a gig in Copper Mountain for a guy named Andy Grammer. He's a pop artist.
I know Andy and I know they're Front of House guy. Awesome.
Yeah. I'm not sure if he's their current guy, but he was a really, really nice guy. And we basically brought out as much PA as we could get because the stage that they asked for is an StageLine SL100. And in order to put out some pop music, obviously you need quite a bit of SPL. So I believe we did some special rigging outside of the stage in order just to hang some larger format boxes. And I remember looking at the DSP afterwards just to see what he had done. And at first I was thinking he was committing huge crimes because he just took a high shelf and cranked the hell out of it. It had added so much top end. And I noticed that it sounded good, but it looked wrong. That type of eye to ear training where you feel guilty making really big cuts or really big changes. So I think my approach in the future would be not only to use that corrective EQ approach, but this is where I'm interested in what Meyer's doing. I haven't tested it and I probably should, but they have something, we're a Meyer house to be specific, but within the Galaxy DSP, they have atmospheric compensation and it's all percentage based. So they ask you to put in the metrics of the atmosphere that you're in, and then you can choose how much you're correlating for things. So that is some homework that I need to do. I'm going to write that down real quick.
See,
I think there's a lot of adjustments that people don't think about at the elevations, and it's like a trial and error thing. So I've done a ton of shows at all the mountain cities as well, talking about Aspen before it's snowmass, and then Vail as well. And when I was touring in the '90s? Holy cow, I'm old.
we I had was a born DJ. In 93, if it helps, Kyle.
Yeah. Okay. Oh shit, dude. Holy cow. I went and saw the first Star Wars at the theater. Holy cow.
Wes, right, is Kyle your dad?
I might be Wes's dad.
Maybe grandfather.
Ouch, man.
I'll have to check my tour schedule from 90. What was it? There 93? No, but in Vail, we had to suspend the DJ rig because of the air. The needles kept bouncing off the record player or whatever it's called, turntables, because that's way cooler. Mm-hmm. DJs call it turntables.
Totally.
And we also noticed with another act going through Aspen that reverb pans act a little bit strange in
that was another
high elevations.
Yeah, and the stereo fidelity is tricky.
Very tricky. And then, of course, one of the big clubs in Aspen, I did last summer with Melissa Etheridge, I noticed how dry the sound was, even like you said, where the throw was not reaching. It was very dry, and I seemed like I had to put more effects on things that I normally wouldn't have, because after that we went to Salt Lake and we're at a normal elevation, and I pulled up my last show file and I was like, holy cow, I could never do that here. So do you run into those kind of things where like, oh man, if your mic technique is just a little bit off on drums or a guitar cabinet or something, that thin air really does play tricks on your mix.
It's true. So I also get to mix as well. I am admittedly still learning, but one of the challenges is absolutely the fact that not only is this at high elevation, but because these are mountain towns, it's often a resort that is paying for an experience. It's not tickets that are being charged to some of the clientele. So it's basically they're just bringing in great artists without it being ticket sales, which leads to some awfully big challenges where you just have a general area that people are walking around and standing up. So you basically shoot the PA as far as you can. And your typical air loss, you know, could be anywhere as low as 8K. But when you go up to the mountains, it feels and it sounds like it's something like 4 or 5K, especially vocals are really, really tough. You're going to get people talking shit about you if you don't remember your windscreens, because outdoors are such a bulk of our shows, outdoor mountain town, you know, live events. That's usually what keeps us in business over the winter, admittedly, is doing some of these mountain town shows. So you better pack some windscreens, you better stay warm. And it's really hard to mix, Kyle, when you don't have the ability to like wear a hat because it's so cold. You've got heaters on stage that are blowing at acoustic guitars, so people can't hear their monitors very well because you've got jet engines trying to keep people warm with glorified space heaters. And the guys that set up the space heaters plugged them directly into your stage power, so you're tripping breakers and losing power. I've done loadouts in -2 degrees where the truck dies, man. You know, like it's very refining to be able to work in that environment, but I like that it's physical. I feel like I mix best when I'm a little bit tired of, you know, putting in some labor. I feel like my blood's pumping well. And all of that to say, iPad mixing is very popular because it's so bright as well. It's really tough to see consoles and laptop screens. You really have to get your nose out of your desk because there's, you know, 200 people in snowsuits standing right in front of a house because they don't recognize you're doing your job because you're just in a tent. You know, it is very challenging. I completely agree with everything you're saying, Kyle.
I don't think that's been addressed on very many podcasts, mixing and elevation.
Oh, breaking some new ground here. And I want to circle back to something you said earlier, Wes, and something I said earlier too. I mean, this is exactly why I have one of my rules, and I've said this to you, Wes. It, you know, if someone says, "Hey, I want to learn about what you do, I want to learn about, you know, test and measurement or whatever," I will never pass up an opportunity to measure a system, even if it's that system that's just a speaker on a stick and there's no DSP and there's no nothing, and I can't do anything to it. A really good question would be like, why bother with an analyzer? Because you can't, right? And the answer is exactly that. That eye ear coordination. Okay, now I know exactly what air loss sounds like because I've heard it this many times, and I know what that looks like on the screen, and I know what I did to fix that, and the DSP, and how those filters work. Mm-hmm. And you're training yourself for that time when you don't have your analyzer or you don't have these tools available, and to hear that stuff and to be able to pick up on it. Because we all know when something's not right. Mm-hmm. We can all hear that. We're all like, man, you know, something sounds funky, and it's a step from that where not everyone knows what's not right. Right. I mean, that's part of why we have our jobs.
That's why we get paid the medium bucks.
Yeah. The audience can go like, gee, this mix is bad, or like, it's just bad sound. Right. But we know why it's bad. And then hopefully we also know what to do to fix it. And so for me, you know, I go with just, you know, fire hose of data. Honestly, I feel like the more information I have at my disposal, the more informed decision I'm going to make. Mm-hmm. That's kind of where I'm at. So yeah. So for exactly that reason, where like you want to train yourself to go, you're like, wow, that filter looks totally scary on the screen, but I heard it and it worked. Mm-hmm. So that's a data point. You file that away in your brain, and the next time you're in that situation, you know what's going on. You know what I mean?
I couldn't agree more.
I think conversely, though, like you said, you know, you're training yourself so that when you don't have the analyzer, you can make some decisions or know what things are. I think the opposite is that, you know, the people who argue like, oh, you're just, you know, looking at lines and doing things. Well, yes, because I can look at this screen because I have correlated it enough that I can tell you what's happening regardless. I mean, I'm not saying you can't don't use your ears. I'm just saying that there are plenty of times where once you do have enough correlation education, you can make those decisions.
I mean, dude, if what we saw on the screen had no resemblance to what we're hearing in the physical world around us, we wouldn't use it, right? Like, if it was just random, I mean, obviously it plays a role in that. So yeah, I mean, that's a great point too, for sure.
Go ahead,
Wes.
I just wanted to tie into what Michael is saying, like, and I'm sure you guys already know this, but for me, the habit I'm trying to create is I want to listen to it before I measure it, and I want to listen to it after I measure it, and I want to listen to it as I measure it, and I want to listen to it after the weather changes and when there's nobody in the room, and then when there's people in the room. I really feel like being able to solidify what I hear versus what I see will hopefully increase my skills as a mix and engineer, but also translating other people's mixes as I get more opportunities to system tech for people that may have different verbiage or show me a curve and expect me to know what that sounds like just by looking at their screen. I can see this being a long-term investment, but it only happens by, you know, listening and looking. You have to correlate it soon before you just trust what you see, because that's how you start to get into the slippery slope of this console sounds different than this one. And while they do have some metrics in their EQ stages, it's foolish to think that just because 3 dB of gain reduction in one place from one provider is the same as one with the other. So I'm really excited for the future. I guess that's what I'm getting to. But yes, ears, ears, ears.
Well, so speaking of the future, I hope that any front of house engineer who is out there who is looking for a system tech, who is dedicated and is aspiring, that you please contact Wes when the world returns and take him with you. But all right, I want to pull the couch back out that we had out earlier from the therapy session.
You're asking some hard hitting shit on this episode, Chris. I got to hand it to you, man. He's stepping it up, bro.
This is more of a question. This is more of like a statement that I wanted to go, but we shifted gears, was totally fine. In terms of the insecurity or things, a couple of things. One, it's okay to be wrong, right? So I think
amen, so, amen,
for sure.
And
don't tell
so,
my lady that.
Like, I think, you know, the hyper focus on always having to have the answer, have the right answer. I think the important thing is, learning when you were wrong, admitting it, failing fast, you know, right? So you can recover or learn from that, right? But it is okay to be wrong. Like, I mean, we say it all the time when here that, like, you know, not everything we're going to say is right. Like, go try it, change it, tell us why and how we're wrong. Like, I'm totally fine with being wrong.
Well, that's, you know what, I was talking to a friend of mine over the week about, you know, I think it's important to say that, you know, this is not the only opinions that we agree with are welcome on the show. That serves no purpose. We've had a fair number of guests who have said something that I said, you know, I'm thinking I wouldn't probably approach it that way, or gee, that really contradicts a lot of the data that I've seen, and that's the whole point. I mean, we're trying to enable a dialogue here, and I want some thought-provoking conversation here. And I certainly hope, and I say this in when I do smart glasses, I certainly hope you don't just take everything I say as gospel or any of your instructors. I mean, the reason that we have tools like smart and voltmeters and you know, oscilloscopes, the reason that we have these things is so that we can answer our own questions. And I think that's really important.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, tying in like the mentorship thing and everything we're talking about in terms of maybe not always having the right answers. There's a lot of things that I don't have the answers to or don't have the knowledge of, but I know who to call. Right. Mm-hmm. So I think an important thing is like, you know, you don't have to know everything, but you just need to know where the resource is to figure it out, you know. And it's not a, you know, it's a humility thing or whatever. Like, you know, it's no big deal to call someone. You know, I've talked about this before on this episode, like working at the company I'm at now, I'm the director of audio, right? So I'm like the head audio person. And initially, you know, when I came in, you know, I was a person who had the most experience and, you know, effectively knew the most. Not saying I know everything. I just happened to know the most at the time. Right. Mm-hmm. And then it was a hard thing for me to deal with of having other techs under me fly past me, to put it bluntly, in terms of tech, and whether it's, you know, whether it's, you know, levels of Dante knowledge, or whether it's level of just whatever knowledge or skill, to the point where, like, you know, the next biggest show that comes across our table, it's not even a question. I'm not going to put myself out before that person. I'm going to put that person out there because I trust them almost more than I trust myself.
Totally.
And it's a, for me, just in as a vulnerability moment, that was not an easy thing for me to wrestle with, right? That was a different level of insecurity of, like, I wanted to kind of be the guy and being okay with having other, you know, and then the other thing is, like, you know, it's, if you're the smartest person in the room, you're in the wrong room. Right.
And you're not learning anything, man.
Right.
Like, I mean, I that's a great, that's a really great point. I like to think of it
free drinks. Come on.
I like to think of, like, being a lawyer versus being a, like, a paramedic, right? Two different types of knowledge. If you show up, if you're a paramedic EQ, right? If you're a paramedic and you show up to an emergency, you have to know. You can't go look it up. You can't call somebody. You have to know how to solve that problem, that medical problem. Versus if you're a lawyer, it's okay to know who knows. You can say, I don't have the answer, but I know how to get it. Right. So some of these things are things you have to know. And some of these things are things it's okay to just know who knows. I mean, and Chris, I think that's a really important idea about, like, coming to terms with the fact that, like, you know, I mean, you can't know everything. And the more specialized you get, the more time you spend on one topic, the less you're learning about other stuff.
Yeah.
So, you know, my band said to me, hey, we want to do a video thing for New Year's. We want to live stream it or record it or whatever. And I'm realizing I don't know how to do this. And so I called Potter up. I said, Potter, you know, I need to talk to you about cameras and switching and capture. And so that's one of those things that I was able to go back within 10 minutes and go to my band and say, here's what we need. And here's how we're going to do it. And so, you know, they still trust me. I'm the person who they go to when they have a tech, you know, here's what our vision is for our show. You're our person who deals with this. They're looking to me to say, what do we need to buy? What do we need to rent? How should we arrange it? And I didn't know. And then I went and found out and I came back to them, and that's okay.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And that's, I mean, Chris, I would imagine that since you're a department head, a lot of your time is probably somewhat administrative in nature.
Yes.
And so that means you're probably spending less time in the field, boots on the ground, hands on the gear, than some of the people that work for you.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, there's been times when I called you and said, hey, you know, and I asked you a question and you're like, oh, call Aram or call, you know, one of your people that works. And you've said, just call him. He'll know. And so like that doesn't make me less likely to call you, though. I think that's the important thing. And if that goes for a gig too, if I get a call for a gig and I say, look, I'm booked that day, I'm probably not the best person for this gig, but I said, call my friend Susie or whoever, and she goes and does the gig and she does a great job, I'm still going to get the next call because the solution I provided was a good solution. And I think that's what people miss. You're not giving up your livelihood by calling someone else who knows about the topic, you know?
Yeah, for sure.
Kyle?
I agree. I can.
By the way, Wes, I want to put it out there that so the first time that I experienced at least roughly the area you live in, basically the west side of the Rockies there, you know, I was, you know, on a tour bus, you know, coming from the west coast. So, like, you know, we did a stop in Salt Lake City and, like, driving east, and it was eye opening that, like, holy shit, the west side of the Rockies is so much more beautiful than the east side of the Rockies. That was it's one of my, there's the two of my favorite spots.
And now we're gonna get east side of the Rockies hate mail too.
Yes, because there's so many of them.
very but, divisive.
Thanks, and it comes to me.
Here's actually Kyle. So my two favorite places in the country to be in the captain's seat of the tour bus at cruise along watching the view is two places. One is where I just described, is that, you know, Salt Lake City coming east. The other would be similar, but up in Vancouver coming east in Canada. Ooh. Is the British Columbia area is freaking amazing.
Oh,
up there.
Yeah.
What's your favorite scenery riding on the bus across the country?
I'm going to have to go with traveling west on 70, basically that Glenwood Springs Pass in Colorado.
Oh my God. Yeah. That's an hour from my place. We go there all the time. We have a nice gig install in PA for one of the hot springs there. So
yeah.
So if you need, a
hand, bro,
I have the manager's phone number. He told me anytime, I will gladly take you up on that.
It's like the 2 mile run right before Glenwood Springs on the east side coming from Denver. It's amazing. And then, yeah, dude, that ride in Vancouver is dope. I also like, I don't know. Every time I would come, I would try to get up and go to the jump seat, you know, and look around. But one of the cooler places is like that Wyoming cross where it's just rolling hills and it's the prairies and sun setting or sun's coming up or whatever the case may be. Yeah, like being able to go sit up with the driver. I smoked cigarettes, so I'd go up and have a random one up front, but that was like my time, you know what I mean? Because like sometimes you just got to shut it down, and to be able to go set it with the driver is great. Like, yeah, that Vancouver thing. So we did a show at it was one of the islands that they're having the Olympic event, and Jet played, and just even walking through all the forests and stuff to get to the events and go back to the camp or base camp or whatever it was amazing. Amazing. Like, and the last place would be, going into Austria. There's a place called Salzburg, and getting there, you kind of have to go through the Alps a little bit. And that was ridiculous. Like driving through cloud type stuff, and the bus would come out of the clouds, and it was breathtaking. Like that's where Salzburg is, where they filmed The Sound of Music. So if you can imagine those big green mountains and snow all the time, it was pretty amazing.
Were the hills alive?
No, that was in Texas, and that guy was also in a couple other movies.
Kyle, you stole mine. My first tour, this is like 19 or 20, I think. And we did Colorado and Wisconsin and that whole area. And man, those mountains are
really close together, Colorado and Wisconsin.
When you're from New York, anything west of New York is the west, right? So,
I agree with that. I'm from New York, Michael.
We did the Midwest and the South. And those were two parts of the country I just hadn't been to. You know, I really hadn't left New England.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, wow, we don't have this here. You know, where I live, it just doesn't look like this. This is just incredible. And it was just, I wish I kept more photos and stuff. I kept very, very poor, records of that period of my life. But it's such a fundamentally different atmosphere. You know, when you wake up at 6 a.m. or whatever and you see that, it was just totally wild.
Our country is beautiful, dude. Our country is, and it's amazing that we don't have the restrictions that Europe and Australia and a lot of the other countries have when it comes to driving a bus. Like it, when people come here from a different country and they have to travel from New York to LA to do shows, like they really get to see it all. Like we have deserts, we have mountains, we have plains, we have the South, we have New York. I mean, it's pretty insane that you can drive across the US and see so much stuff. It's kind of a blessing. Yeah. I took a lot of photos, man. I wish I could probably post some of them. I used to do castles and cathedrals. So,
oh, cool.
We had this thing where, the crew at some point just said, if we're in a place, we have to do the thing, whatever the thing is. And for me, it was castles and cathedrals. And if right after soundcheck, we would split out and do whatever, and whoever went with you, they went. And if you were solo, you were solo, and you just did the thing. So yeah, that was my refuge, you know, cause, sometimes being on the road for 4 months at a time is pretty much a strain on your mind, dude. It really is. Like, and I think that was part of me that got out, and I didn't need a partner. I didn't need to know to speak the language. I just needed my phone with a map on it, and I just go. See you, bye.
We did the thing, actually, when we were out in St. Louis doing the Webster thing with you, Kyle. My girlfriend, she wanted to go do the arch.
Yeah, and big, and actually, you know, that is the gateway to the West. So anything west of St. Louis is actually the West. So,
which is west of New York as well. So my theory holds. So
yeah. You're not wrong.
Wes, thank you so much for being with us and sharing your experiences. And it's been a really cool conversation, man. I appreciate having you on the show.
Thanks for including me. You guys have been an amazing resource and a kindred spirit from afar. I appreciate you.
Aww.
Wow, Kyle, some song lyrics there, buddy.
I know, man. I want, he touched me. It's good.
Warm and fuzzies here.
Warm and fuzzies.